Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the state of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. You may be seated. And good afternoon to everyone. Please wear your masks when you are not arguing or presenting, but when you are arguing or presenting, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand you. Appreciate your abiding by those rules. This is obviously State ex rel Wagner versus Evnen. So good afternoon again to everybody. There are six judges here in the courtroom, and Justice Miller Lerman is participating by WebEx, but we'll all introduce ourselves. Mike Hevekin, I am the Chief Justice, and by seniority on the court, to the WebEx.
Justice Miller Lerman here, participating by WebEx. Thank you.
William Castle.
Stephanie Stacy, good afternoon.
Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik.
John Freidenberg.
Very good. Do we have any questions from anybody before we begin? Mr. Fallison, good afternoon to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
And please the court. My name is Mark Fallison. I appear here today on behalf of Relator Terry Wagner in this matter. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. 1 week ago today, the Nebraska Secretary of State, in what he determined was a close question in a close case, determined that the medical cannabis constitutional amendment was legally sufficient and rejected Relator's request that the measure be withheld from the ballot. It is the Relator's position that this close case was wrongly decided by the Secretary of State, and thus the present original action was filed. It is the Relator's position for today's roadmap. First, I'm going to lay out some of the specific text in the proposal and highlight some of the problems with it. Second, I will then explain why the measure must be withheld from the November 2020 ballot. First, it violates the single subject rule. Second, it confuses voters as to the issues they will be asked to decide. Finally, it creates doubt as to what action voters will have authorized after the election if, in fact, it passes. First, the proposed constitutional amendment. The Nebraska Medical Cannabis Constitutional Amendment seeks to create a new Article 19 in our state constitution. It contains 9 subsections. Sections 1 and 2 can be combined together for our discussion here today. They essentially provide that for individuals 18 and older, and those younger than 18, that these sections would grant such individuals a right, if recommended by a licensed physician or nurse practitioner, to use, possess, access, purchase, and produce an adequate supply of cannabis, cannabis products, and cannabis-related equipment to, quote, alleviate, close quote, a serious medical condition.
Do we have any other constitutional rights that are contingent upon a recommendation of a physician?
Not that I know off the top of my head, Your Honor.
Is that a legal sufficiency problem?
Well, there's a lot of problems with this. Certainly, one of our arguments is the fact that the right to go purchase or acquire cannabis for the purposes stated forth in the proposal, there's no indication that the physician even has to be licensed in the state of Nebraska. And it's also unclear from the proposal what it is that physician or nurse practitioner is to recommend. Is it to say this will alleviate, but you can purchase unknown quantities of it? It's unclear.
And I beg your pardon, are these remarks addressed to legal sufficiency, or which is what's on the table pre-election, or are those objections that you articulated more appropriate if this amendment were adopted?
Great question, Your Honor. These are not substantive objections that we bring here today. Rather, they're on the face of the ballot measure as to be presented by the voters. And they go to one of the three elements of the test announced in the City of North Platte case, which is it confuses voters as to the issues that they will be asked to decide, and creates doubt as to what they will have approved if, in fact, it passes. And so this is a facial challenge as authorized by your past precedent. This is not a substantive challenge here today.
So to the extent this is ballot week at the court, you may have noticed, and we had a conversation yesterday, perhaps you heard some of it, as to whether or not the one or the two or the three in the North Platte precedent pertaining to municipal initiatives is in fact the framework slash test that this court has adopted, or was it merely referred to in Luchner, the 2014 case, but not necessarily established as the framework? Because as I understand it, and thank you for the roadmap, two of your objections would be confusion and misleading, things of that sort, right? So they would find their origin in that case if that case had adopted that framework. But I'm asking you, do you believe that is the case, and where have we said so subsequently? Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor, another great question. So please don't be offended if I tell you that our jurisprudence on this particular area is a bit muddled. So I spent quite a bit of time.
And I have to interject and apologize because I was there. But
sorry.
Thank you.
No offense intended, but it is hard to synthesize these cases, right? And so I spent quite a bit of time over the last couple of days. Again, we've only been doing this for seven, so haven't had that much time, trying to synthesize what has occurred. And I think an appropriate synthesis might be this, that back in the Drummond decision, I believe in 1939, essentially the case, the court, although not as express, perhaps as the North Platte case said, but arguably set out these three factors. And yes, it was a municipal initiative challenge. And essentially, it was common law. And I think if you looked at the three elements, it is our position that all three elements are applicable to your analysis here today, irrespective of it being a voter-initiated initiative to amend our state constitution rather than a municipal matter.
Are they independently applicable? Can you have a voter confusion or misleading problem without a single subject problem?
Yes.
And where from the text of the constitution would I find that?
So, again, let me highlight there. So if we're going to look at the single subject, there is a constitutional source for that, right? Article 3, Section 2 clearly provides that. The other two elements, what I think if you look at Drummond and try to analyze it and why it was subsequently adopted and refined in the City of North Platte case, that's common law. And so common law in creating the second and third element, which is voter confusion and uncertainty as to what we adopted and the impact of that, those are the origin of that is common law. And I think that would help us synthesize the decisions over that time. I can certainly envision a case, for example, that was horribly confusing in its language, but may only be one subject. And so it would be our position that in those instances, the Secretary of State should not allow that measure to go forward either.
But your right to object to that would arise from a source other than the Constitution.
It's common law.
It's a common law.
Correct. So, again, it is our position that all three factors apply. With respect to Sections 1 and 2, that authorizes for authorized users. Section 3, it's very broad-reaching. It says that the rights granted by Sections 1 and 2 include the right to access or purchase cannabis products, equipment from private entities or their agents. They can, for growing, cultivation, processing, transportating, selling, testing, transferring. It's Section 4 that we believe is the biggest problem when it comes to the single subject. Section 4 is a rather significant carte blanche grant of authority, grant of immunity, grant of immunity from arrest, grant of immunity from prosecution, grant of immunity from civil and criminal penalties for violations of the acts. One of the issues that the Secretary of State himself identified when combining 3 and 4 and analyzing those, this is the example he used. Even if a distributor knows or reasonably knows that the amount of cannabis purchased from the distributor is grossly excessive in quantity or frequency from the standpoint of purely personal use, The distributor is absolutely protected from liability if the purchaser is an authorized user. We believe that if voters were given a chance, that is a separate issue than whether they would wish to authorize the possession, the use of medical cannabis in the state. That is so unique, that that carte blanche grant of immunity. We believe that voters should have an opportunity to vote separately on that particular issue.
Is there anything in the second sentence of subsection 3 that limits the size of these grow and distribution networks?
No.
And is there anything in that section that limits what can be done with the marijuana grown, processed, manufactured, et cetera?
No.
And this, should this be adopted by the voters, this would be self-executed, right?
Correct. Going on, again, another problem which goes more towards the second and third elements of the test that we respectfully request the court to apply is voter confusion and uncertainty as far as what the effect is if, in fact, it is adopted. And that goes to the number of provisions in here which simply lack definition. Now, the drafters of this went to great detail to define what cannabis is, but they intentionally
didn't. Is there any source for this drafting? Did it, for example, come from Nevada or Colorado?
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor. Don't know. The ballot measure does not define what a serious medical condition is. It doesn't define what is meant by the word alleviate when it provides that an individual can acquire cannabis to, quote, alleviate a serious medical condition. And perhaps most importantly, it doesn't define what an adequate supply of cannabis is as far as what a person can purchase or possess. A complete and objective reading of this ballot measure leads one to conclude that it does, in fact, violate the single subject rule, confuses voters, and there's tremendous uncertainty as to what the outcome would be. So again, we've already touched a little bit upon the single subject rule. Your past precedent, Lunger 1 and 2, the test is whether the provisions have a natural and necessary connection with each other and together are part of one general subject.
The Secretary of State, if I recall correctly, seemed to conclude that there was a connection between use and production or manufacture.
Because otherwise, how could you get into the state?
Do you agree with that analysis, or is that?
I won't object to that analysis with the understanding that we still object to the fact that certain terms such as adequate supply are not defined. And we also have a significant concern under the single subject rule, this carte blanche and grant of immunity. That we believe that's the separate subject that needs to be separated out.
Are those naturally and necessarily connected?
What, Your Honor?
The use and the production?
Yeah, no. Certainly that could be imported or brought in from another state. It's not necessary that that be conducted in this particular state. So there could certainly be a mechanism from a regulatory standpoint in which it could be made available, but doesn't have to actually be produced, manufactured, transported intrastate for a person to be able to use it.
If this were to be on the ballot and pass, what would the effective date be?
I did not see any language in the particular language as far as when it becomes effective.
Would it make most of the, for example, criminal marijuana laws subject to unconstitutional analysis almost immediately?
It creates significant issues, Your Honor. Again, and the problem goes back to that immunity provision. It simply is not, it's a separate issue that voters should have an opportunity to vote on, different from the issue of whether we're going to authorize the possession and use of medical cannabis in this particular state.
What does the immunity provision do that the authorization of manufacture provision doesn't do? I mean, one seems to legalize and then the other provides immunity. What's the distinction between those two concepts?
Well, certainly you can authorize the production, manufacture, transport, but to say that they shall not even be subject to arrest or prosecution for what? Or civil or criminal penalties. It seems as that is much broader than would arguably be necessary for simply allowing a private entity or its agent to actually produce the item. And so it's our position that is far broader than is necessary in order to effectuate what their stated intended purpose is, which is to permit the use and possession of medical cannabis in this particular state.
Do you think that there is, and perhaps this is unfair because it's hypothetical, do you think that the sponsor is seeking to put something of this nature into a constitutional amendment, that there is a way to do it? You've explained that it violates single subject is your view. What would one subject be?
One subject would be whether to authorize the possession and use of medical cannabis. The second subject, if there's not more, but certainly a second subject, is whether we're going to grant this broad immunity from even being prosecuted or arrested relative to the particular provisions. And so we believe that's at least a second subject. Certainly I can, if I were drafting this, certainly there's a lot of things I would do differently, especially to address the voter confusion and uncertainty issues. There are very significant terms in here which are undefined.
Isn't growing and manufacturing the second issue or a third issue?
Potentially, yes, Your Honor. Again, there are multiple subjects in here. One could argue that manufacturing may relate. As we discussed before, it's not necessary to be manufactured in the state in order to be possessed and used. But that is a potential separate subject. Nebraska voters could decide we don't want it manufactured in our state. We don't want it grown in our state for medicinal use. But we will allow people to possess it. And certainly, if we were to further define what adequate supply is, that may address some of the uncertainties. But that's not defined.
Could a proposition be made or a proposed amendment be made as in the language of an exception, that here's a constitutional amendment which will accept from the criminal law, give me the number, right, that criminalizes stuff for the possession and or manufacture of medical marijuana. No more, no less.
It's possible, but again, that's not what this provision does. It's far more broad than that. And for that reason, because of the significance of that proposal, we believe that clearly in and of itself constitutes a second item that the voters should have an opportunity to vote up or down, as opposed to simply combining it, log rolling it, with the provision relating to the possession and use of medicinal cannabis.
I'd like to return to your argument about the common law and constitutional initiatives. Common law, of course, was adopted, as I'm sure you're aware, by legislative enactment on the entry of Nebraska into the Union in 1867. But the constitutional provision regarding initiatives was amended much more recently to add the single subject rule. Does the constitutional amendment adding the single subject rule displace the common law or any effect of the common law in the interpretation of this constitutional provision?
Your Honor, it'd be our position that it does not. Again, precedent of this court, the North Platte case, for example, we believe that its continued use in reference to what we would contend is a common law source of the three elements, we believe that would indicate that this court at least has implicitly taken the position that it did not displace the common law relative to those three elements.
None of the case law of which you're aware considers an argument along those lines.
No, Your Honor.
Was the 1998 constitutional amendment unnecessary to add a specific, explicit, single subject provision?
Yeah, my understanding that was done at the recommendation of the Attorney General opinion in that regard. Again, I think there was case law that would support that was the position that had been previously adopted, but perhaps for clarity purposes that was added. But again, I believe that was at the direction of the Attorney General. I see that I'm in my rebuttal time. I'm going to rest at this moment and come back up.
Thank you very much. Mr. Grams, good morning to you. Before you start, we had some discussion about whether we were doing 20 minutes or 30 minute arguments, and I'm not sure where
we are. We would stipulate to 20, and all my understanding is counsel as well.
With that, you may proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. Jason Grams for Nebraskans for Sensible Marijuana Laws, also known as Nebraskans for Medical Marijuana. Here with me today in the gallery are the sponsors of the Medical Marijuana Initiative, Senator Anna Wishart, Senator Adam Moorfeld, and my co-counsel, Terry Mickelson. This case is about just one thing. Do the provisions of the Medical Marijuana Initiative share a natural and necessary connection with the initiative's purpose? If they do, there is a single subject under Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution, and the Secretary of State correctly determined to place the amendment on the ballot. In the Christensen Medicaid expansion case last cycle, this court clarified, quote, the controlling consideration in determining the singleness of a proposed amendment is its singleness of purpose and the relationship of the details to the general subject.
What's the singleness of purpose of this initiative?
To ensure Nebraskans legal access to medical marijuana for serious medical conditions.
Where in that articulation of the primary purpose is there a recognition that there are new constitutional rights being created? New personal rights, new property rights, and new constitutional immunity rights.
The word ensure is where I would place the right creation. The legal access is where I would place the provisions relating to immunity, although they are much narrower than I think we've previously discussed. We'll get to that. And the word access is key to understanding this entire proposition. This is not three separate propositions. This is a constitutional amendment designed to guarantee access to patients who have a need for the medication because of their serious medical condition.
Do you agree or disagree that the initiative creates new constitutional rights?
I agree.
And I asked a question of Mr. Folsom with respect to contingent constitutional rights, and I'm just curious, can you point me to anything else in our jurisprudence or in our Constitution where a recognized constitutional right is contingent on a recommendation of another citizen?
I didn't prepare an answer for that, Judge. I think the language is clear that is what's happening here. You need a recommendation from a medical provider in order to execute your right to cannabis for serious medical conditions.
Which begs the question, what does recommendation mean? And how is there a record made of this?
So recommendation.
So that some people would have some rights that other people didn't?
A recommendation would be a paper signed by a physician or a nurse practitioner.
Where does it say that?
I suppose it could be oral, Your Honor, but it would be a recommendation from a physician or a nurse practitioner that this patient would present to collect their legal marijuana. This type of method is used in just about every state where marijuana or medical marijuana is legal. There are 33 of them in the country right now. We're not plowing new ground here, Mr. Chief Justice. This is how these types of provisions are executed.
Are these most recent questions that we're now entertaining substantive constitutional law? And are they addressing perhaps potential weaknesses, either constitutionally or based on the existence of other statutes and maybe delegating authority to whomever, that kind of thing? But the question is, what we are doing here today is a pre-election examination for singleness.
That's right.
This amendment may not be adopted if it were to go on, and we wouldn't be evaluating constitutional weaknesses.
I absolutely agree. Several of the propositions that are being placed before the court are substantive challenges cloaked as second subjects.
Mr. Grams, you made reference to other states. Can we look at language in other states' constitutions, statutes that would help us interpret this? Is the source of these proposals from some language from another state or another document?
Will we be able to do that on a substantive challenge?
Not on substantive challenges, on the challenges we have right now. What is the source of the language for these proposals?
Okay. So the source of the language for the proposals comes from the ballot committee. The ballot committee proposed the language. Some of that language may come from other states. Some of it may be tailored to comply with this state's single subject rule, to be frank. We certainly were looking at this court's precedent as we designed the constitutional amendment and made certain that every provision within this statute had a natural and necessary connection to the purpose of this constitutional amendment.
What is the natural and necessary connection of the, I'm going to call them the exceptions? And so, you know, we've talked a lot about the first five paragraphs of the initiative, but there wasn't much briefing done on 6, 7, or 8, and I haven't heard us talk much about those. Okay. So 6 limits the use in several respects. 7 talks about employers, I believe.
Yeah, so there, I would call those the scope portions. They are defining the scope of
the right. They're limiting the right.
They're limiting the scope of the right.
Limiting the constitutional right.
Correct. We're creating a constitutional right with certain contours that are defined by sections 1 and 2 and 6, 7, and 8. And we're defining cannabis in section 9 to include what it includes. So I think of them as definitional sections that help define the scope of the right that will be applied by the court later.
As we've defined log rolling in our jurisprudence, mm-hmm. Do paragraphs 6, 7, and 8 satisfy that definition?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Because they go towards the same primary purpose of the overall statute or the overall constitutional amendment. I'm sorry, Judge.
Well, described the overall purpose, it was access. It was access to cannabis for serious medical conditions. 6, 7, and 8 actually back away from that. Inmates, for instance, couldn't use it. There are certain circumstances under which individuals, even with serious medical conditions, couldn't use it. Employers could require their employees not to come to work impaired. I mean, there are a whole bunch of things that back out of that right. How are they ensuring the right? How are those exceptions to the constitutional right achieving the same purpose?
I wouldn't call those exceptions. I would call them definitions of the scope of the right. So we're creating a constitutional right, and part of that right is that you can't go smoke marijuana outside. You can't smoke marijuana. There's no requirement that you be able to smoke marijuana in prison. That's part of the rights we're creating in the totality of the amendment. So I wouldn't say that they're exceptions necessarily. I would say that
Are they limitations on the access that you are creating?
Sure, they are. Absolutely. And they're time, place, and manner restrictions, ultimately, when and where you can exercise these rights as part of the amendment that grants the right in the first place.
Do you think that the legislature could enact laws that were more restrictive than the statements made in paragraphs 6, 7, and 8? Because I understand that this initiative contemplates legislative rules and regulations, correct?
That's correct.
That's contemplated here.
Reasonable legislative rules and regulations.
So could the legislature do something other than has been spelled out in paragraphs 6, 7, and 8 to limit or restrict the new constitutional right to use, possess, and manufacture cannabis?
I'm going to say that's a substantive challenge.
To decide whether it's a separate subject.
Sure. Let's do a separate example here, Judge. This section, so this is 6A. So this section should not be construed to allow the smoking of cannabis in public. Could the legislature come and create or say, we're going to allow smoking of cannabis in public? Well, as I read this, the section, which is the constitutional provision, wouldn't. Could be construed to cause that, but the statute could. So as I read this particular one, 6A, the answer is yes, the legislature could do that. And we could go down and examine each one of them in that way. I would submit to you that those are substantive issues for this court after the legislation is passed. And I've just got to respond to the suggestion that this amendment somehow sets aside the criminal law of Nebraska. It absolutely does not do that. And I think that's where the secretary
is it not self-executing.
It is self-executing, and it's narrow, so it's not going to. It's not going to
abrogate law enforcement. Not run into constitutional problems almost immediately trying to enforce the existing criminal marijuana statutes?
Well, I mean, it's just like it would be with, say this is codeine cough syrup, and I don't have a cough anymore, and I sell it to Mr. Folsom. Mr. Folsom, I've committed a crime on the crime of distribution of a controlled substance, right? Say the pharmacy sold me a huge box or a truckload of the codeine cough syrup. I sell it to Mr. Folsom. Now, since the pharmacy's given me distribution quantities of a controlled substance, they're liable criminally for that conduct in violation of the Nebraska Controlled Substances Act. This doesn't change any of that with respect to marijuana. If marijuana is grown legally pursuant to paragraph 3, and by the way, paragraph 3, ignored by the opponents, only authorizes a party to produce for sale or delivery to an individual authorized to use cannabis under subsection may, 1 or 2.
It does not say shall.
It says may produce.
It does not say may only. It says may.
May grow, which means they could choose not to grow or sell to a person authorized to use cannabis.
Does it limit what they can grow, process, manufacture in any way?
Absolutely. The rights protected in this section, so this is 5A, shall only be subject to reasonable laws, rules, and regulations to present, among other things, to prevent unlawful diversion of cannabis. When that comes before this court's going to find the criminal laws and the Controlled Substances Act reasonable every single time. There is no language here that sets aside the proposition that I just set forth. If someone grows a hay bale of cannabis and sells it to a patient, they've sold distribution quantities. This doesn't alleviate that proposition. If a patient sells to a third party, that person has committed a crime, just like with the codeine cough syrup.
Does subsection 3 give a constitutional right to have marijuana grow in distribution networks?
What is that? I'm sorry, Judge, I don't know what a marijuana grow distribution network
grow
is.
And distribution network.
I don't know what that.
They have the ability to grow marijuana mm-hmm. in any quantity that they see fit. Is that correct?
For sale or delivery to an individual authorized to use cannabis.
So the under answer is yes. They could that could be any size operation.
If there were that many customers or patients that needed the
cannabis. Distribute as necessary.
Distribute to those patients.
And there's nothing that limits that to the state of Nebraska.
Not under this amendment. Now, and there was a question that asked of counsel, you know, where he volunteered that you could go to a neighboring state. And I'm not sure that's true. I just don't know the answer. If transporting medical cannabis from, say, Colorado on in interstate commerce to Nebraska would create problems with access.
I'm meaning actually just shipping out, not shipping in.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that based on the terms of the amendment. I could analyze it. I would suggest that that's a post-adoption substantive challenge.
And when is the effective date if this passes?
I am also at a loss. I believe it's self-executing upon passage.
Okay.
But I have not researched that. I should have.
And that'd be before the legislature is able to meet again to make any kind of regulations.
I apologize. I don't know if the legislature meets between November 3rd and when it reconvenes. But the answer would be yes. If it's between that time period, then sure. I would suggest that this, even during the period pre-regulation, and there will be regulation. There's regulation of medical cannabis in every state where it's been adopted. My clients are two state senators. This body here will regulate or delegate regulation to another party. But even if there's not, as the constitutional provision is written, it creates a right for use of patients with serious medical conditions, but only when they have a recommendation. So the day after, are they going to get a recommendation made? Then they're going to have to get the cannabis. The constitutional provision, contemplates regulation and licensing of those cannabis producers, and then that'll be how these people get their cannabis under the regulated scheme.
They could drive to Colorado and get this marijuana.
I think under this, under the proposal, yes, under federal law, I don't offer an opinion. And I would just say that is the one area that the secretary, in his pretty exhaustive opinion that he produced in about 30 hours from the time he received the objection, falls lacking a little bit. It does not acknowledge the fact that the ordinary Nebraska criminal law is there to prevent diversion of drugs that are regulated from getting to the wrong people. And I know, I don't know which of you, but I know some of you are former prosecutors. I believe that the day after this passed, if there was diversion from a legal cannabis patient to an illegal person, that the prosecutors have no problem charging that person and obtaining a conviction. And if there was a conspiracy to divert, they would have no problem obtaining that conviction either. This is not a wholesale abrogation of the drug laws, although it's being proposed to be that. I think review of the provisions, and in particular 1 and 2 and 4 and 5, make it very clear that this doesn't abrogate the drug laws. And so
what's your view of the status of what we've called today the common law single subject test? Does that apply in a case of a constitutional initiative?
Are you referring to the confusion and doubt?
Yeah, the three-part test discussed.
And we didn't cover much of that in the brief because we don't think this language is confusing. But I did listen to the opinion yesterday, and my friends, Mr. Berry and Mr. Lopez, discussing that. I did a little review last night. I'll offer you my opinion about that. First of all, the basis in Lutger appears to be not very strong. When you look backwards, I looked at the cases that cite the cases. So you look at Lutger, it goes to Tilgner, and then in footnote 48 of Tilgner, it cites this Drummond case. Drummond's from 1939, doesn't stand for the proposition, at least doesn't say the proposition that it's cited for. I think that's not even necessarily a good statement of the law, but it is in the opinion. However, the opinion then goes on to apply the necessary and natural test. And so it says these are the reasons, and now we're going to apply the necessary and natural test. I think this court struggled with that in Christensen 2 years ago. I think this court decided to adopt the necessary and natural test. And I think these other components, we call them confusion or doubt or log rolling, are the policy bases for the necessary and natural test. In other words,
we talk about the common law, we're often talking about England. I mean, does England have initiative and referendum limits thereon? Is this really what do we mean?
I don't know how to answer the first part of your question, Judge. I do think that it means we're adopted, that Nebraska adopted the common law of England by statute when it was at the founding of the state. And it received it. There are these reception statutes that the states passed when they were founded. What was the status of the single subject rule regarding initiative petitions in England in 17? I don't know. I apologize, Your Honor. I just haven't reviewed it carefully enough. But I will say this, this notion that there's confusion based on undefined terms in a constitutional provision is troublesome. If you look at, Madison would not be able to work with this. Equal protection of the laws, due process, and as is kind of relevant today, things like shall have a single subject, right, are not crystal clear in the language of the constitutions.
On the other hand, though, a provision like this, we would not, there isn't an analog to that in the U.S. Constitution. This is something we would more frequently see in a statute. Right? We're creating a right to do something. We're saying this is legal, this isn't legal. We're enshrining this as the constitutional,
which is what we do in the Constitution. We've enshrined various rights in the Constitution, liberty and property, to name a few, in Nebraska and the federal constitutions. And here so there's a criticism that there's something about having undefined terms like serious medical condition in the state constitution is somehow prohibitive or makes it unclear what's going to be asked. I see my time is up. May I finish, Your Honor?
You may finish.
Okay. I think that that sets, is there any doubt that if we had enumerated 100 medical conditions, epilepsy, cancer, and so forth, that we would now be standing before you being accused of violating the single subject rule because every single one of those was somehow a separate subject. That's a catch-22 that this court has indicated they don't want to put us in because they're you're trying to value or trying to protect our precious right to the initiative process.
Isn't the use of ambiguous terms and constitutional provisions, doesn't that cause significant problems down the line to enforce those constitutional rights?
Not if there's, those rights are always defined. And they may be defined by statute, they may be defined by regulation, they may be defined by court cases. Hopefully not, but eventually those things will all make it to this court and the contours of those undefined rights will be defined. To the extent there's an ambiguous term, what we're supposed to be doing on this pre-vote review is to determine if there is a constitutional reading of the language of the proposal. And if there is, we should pass it to the voters and let them decide the merits of it. Then later on substantive review, we can see in a case where there's evidence and in a case where the law is clear in the area that's before this court, whether that's a constitutional or unconstitutional provision or not.
Following up on Justice Papik's questions, looking at the constitutional provision here, this looks a lot more like a statute than does a traditional constitutional provision under Nebraska, correct? I mean, just its format and the way it's set forth, there's a lot more regulatory feeling to it than there is, you have a right to do this.
I disagree. I think in reading the Constitution, there are provisions set out this way. There are provisions that are short. I mean, I'm reminded of the hunting and fishing, which has a long string of rights in similar ways to these sections. So I just disagree, but you may see it that way, and that's important.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
Last question I have for you, then I'll let you finish up. Now, this provision is obviously contrary to federal law as it currently stands. But if this is not the proper time for that challenge to be raised, when would the proper time for a challenge to that fact be raised?
So that'll be assuming the voters pass the measure.
Make that assumption.
Assuming the voters pass the measure, and I agree with you, it's not substantively right, but I think everybody knows that it's not presently substantively right. I will give you a preview of our argument in that case, if you like.
And that's not necessary. I'm just wondering when it would be properly.
There would need to be a prosecution of some kind or some kind of issue that arise makes it to this court where a party wanted to assert that federal law preempted it or the supremacy clause dictated whether this right or this constitutional amendment was constitutional or not. And that's how it would make its way up here. I think it would be on some substantive review. It could be a civil case, it could be a criminal case, it could be a number of different postures that I can think of.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You talked about 33 other states. Have most of those adopted a legalized medical marijuana scheme that is statutory, or are there some that have made it a constitutional right? Is this the first example of a constitutional right to use medical marijuana?
I am 99% sure this is not the first time, but I could not cite to you the others. So I'm going to say I personally think that. I won't represent that I know that. We are certainly not the first to legalize medical marijuana. I believe we are far from the first to constitutionalize a right to medical marijuana, but I couldn't cite a case to you today. I think that'll come up on substantive review, and we'll be able to bring you all 33 states, none of whom have withdrawn their medical marijuana law or has it been overturned by a court for violating the supremacy clause or a conflict preemption. Okay, I will close then. The Nebraska Constitution provides that the power of initiative is the first power reserved by the people. The power is precious and is one which the courts are zealous to preserve to the fullest tenable measure of spirit as well as letter. Here, over 182,000 Nebraskans petitioned to exercise their right to vote on the medical marijuana initiative. This court should zealously protect the power of initiative, recall its alternative writ, and allow the voters to decide this measure on November 3rd. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, sir. 3 minutes and 18 seconds.
3 minutes and 18 seconds, Mr. Falls.
Got my mask earlier. I apologize. A couple points. One, counsel for the interveners made several references to distribution quantities of cannabis. That's nowhere in here. The only the definition relative to how much a person can possess, use, is adequate supply. Again, it appears to be that subjective to each person, how much they want to purchase, own, possess, what they want to do with it. The discussion here today clearly indicates that there are significant issues regarding this measure. Facial issues, which are subject to challenge at this stage, specifically the single subject rule, specifically, we do believe it is applicable, voter confusion, and there's serious doubt as to what the voters will have approved if, in fact, they pass this measure. For the reasons stated here today, as well as the reasons in our brief, we respectfully request that you find that the proposed constitutional amendment is legally insufficient and invalid, that this court issue a writ of mandamus requiring respondent Secretary of State to deny certification and withhold the proposed constitutional amendment from the November 2020 ballot. Are there any questions?
Do you know whether there are any other states that have legalized medical marijuana by making it a constitutional right as opposed to a statutory scheme?
I do not, Your Honor.
Does common law just mean the court made it up?
Kind of, to be quite candid with you. So obviously, here's my belief and understanding of what common law is. Certainly, we started out with the common law of England. And since then, it's such a cool way to tell lay people and clients, it's court-made law. It's not set forth in statute or constitutional provision. It is simply a statement that tries to take general rules and principles of the law and state that this is how we're going to govern this particular situation. I think that's kind of a not a legal, but a layperson's definition of common law. And I could be wrong.
And it's your view that Luchner in 2014 imported the, quote, common law pertaining to initiatives in municipalities, authorization of which is by statute, not constitution, that the law associated with such initiatives was imported into this area of constitutional statewide amendment. Is that your view?
Your Honor, what I was attempting to do was to synthesize your case law from Drummond up until Christensen v. Gale. And that was a way in which to make it clear that the single subject arguably is now clearly set forth in our state constitution. But the other two, reading the opinion, appears to be common law based and has been cited by this case with authority as recently as the City of North Platte case. So that is a way in which you can kind of reconcile your past precedent.
But, well, I was trying to get to the origin of common law because not all common law is created equal. So the common law surrounding initiatives in municipalities, if I'm correct, the power for the initiative at the municipal level is by statute rather than the Constitution, if I believe. So it doesn't necessarily follow that you should import that into this area where at least all of us seem to agree the Constitution with respect to constitutional amendments must meet the single subject requirement.
Now, I'll just note this, Your Honor. Again, this court has indicated that it would be a strange or bizarre result if we granted greater protections to a municipal initiative provision than we're willing to do with respect to attempts to amend our state constitution. So we believe
with respect to single subject.
Correct. I believe when it comes to municipalities, to the extent we're going to be concerned about voter confusion and uncertainty as to what the outcome means, certainly at a minimum that should apply and those protections should exist for an attempt to amend our state constitution.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for the day. So the court is adjourned and you are excused. Please leave the courtroom by the side door. And you may do that now before we leave the courtroom. And we appreciate it if you keep your masks on.